HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 387, recorded live Thursday, August 29th, 2013. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support. Online at telerik.com. And by franklins.net, makers of GesturePack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft's Kinect for Windows developers. Details at gesturepak.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Natasha Irizarry about Lean UX.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. I'm down here in Jacksonville, Florida at Code on the Beach. I'm talking with UX strategist Natasha Irizarry. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well. You did a good talk on Lean UX.
Yeah,
that sounds like three buzzwords to me.
Three? How?
Like lean, user, and experience.
Oh, okay. I guess UX is two words.
Yeah. But I'm just saying like UX, I guess, is one thing.
Yeah.
But, and I'm not disrespecting your industry, but yeah. I have to say from the developer's perspective where output is measured in lines of code and like number of DLLs shipped and number of web, it's like, well, what's the UX person do? They're just mostly hanging around in Photoshop.
Sort of. Not really.
Okay, then solve that for me.
So user experience design, or whatever you want to call it, is the idea of making a tool not feel like a tool. So when you're on your phone, it doesn't feel like you're on your phone. It's like, especially us, iPhones, it's your calendar. It's your photo gallery. It's your black book. And it's interesting because growing up, my dad had this black book of, he had pictures of us, me and my sisters, his, you know, events, and he would haul this giant thing everywhere. And now, like, I do the same thing, but it's on my phone.
That was like, that was his PDA.
Yeah.
Like black book, all his addresses, all his birthdays.
It was a giant black book.
Like a George Costanza wallet.
Yes, yes, yes. And so UX is the idea of creating something that doesn't feel like you're using anything at all.
When did the name UX come out? Like the last 4 or 5 years, we went from user interface designers that did buttons and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And now it's like experience.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure when it became called UX. I learned about it. I didn't even know I was doing it. And someone asked me earlier, how do you learn how to do UX? And like, I just don't feel like it can be taught.
Really? But can't you get a human computer interaction degree? I know people with PhDs in HCI.
Yeah, but I think a lot of UX people have degrees in like psychology, which is interesting because we're really understanding humans and how they work. And how they like navigate through, like if it's a web, like a website, and applying that into our designs. And
there's a great book. I think it's Donald Norman who has The Design of Everyday Things.
Yes, I love that book. Love that book. There's also a book called Design Yourself.
Okay, I haven't heard that one.
I can't remember who wrote it, but it's awesome.
I will add links in the show notes for people who are listening.
Okay.
So awesome. The Design of Everyday Things has this picture of a teapot on the outside. And I think it's in that book where he talks about the, like we're looking at this door right now. You and I are in this room and there's this door and it's got the bar across that you push
on. The satisfying click of things, cabinets that close. Mm-hmm. Someone told me that they designed that one. Like that's how they said what they did. And I was like, well, I'm going to use that forever. Yeah.
Well, this bar here, apparently if you put the bar in the middle, centered, people will shove it in the middle and struggle to open the door because of where the hinge is.
Well, yeah.
But if you put it off to one side, it makes you want to push it in the center of that bar, which then causes the door to open correctly.
Yeah. And also on the topic of doors and their usability, the doors always have the handle on both sides, but they only go one way and they don't say push or pull.
Yeah.
Just guess every time.
That's like a huge door usability problem.
I have that at work every day, and every day I do it wrong. Every day.
I want to pull on the handle, and I want to push on the button.
Yeah.
I hate it when you have to grab a handle and then push forward. That makes no sense. That makes no sense.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So, but you are also a web designer. And now do those things always go together?
No. I guess maybe 7 years ago, I would have defined myself as a web designer or a visual designer. But UX is so much more than that. It's planning everything out, reading usability tests, being involved in testing, really understanding the product and the customers or people who users, and making it good for them. It's less about the business and more about the user.
Mm-hmm.
And I will always fight for the user. It feels like a lot of times I'm the devil's advocate of every meeting I'm in, because they're like, we need to meet these numbers. I'm like, well, you're not going to do that because no one's going to use it. They're not going to think to click there or do this.
Interesting. I was going to kind of guess the opposite, because the user experience person sure needs to make a great experience for the user. But
yeah,
if the point is to take money from the user, let's say that you're designing a shopping cart and checkout process,
yeah,
it has to be an awesome experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to satisfy both the user,
mm-hmm,
who feels like no money was taken, like it was just this effortless experience.
Yes.
And the business, who is going to look at numbers like conversions, and they're going to say, hey, your last design converted 5% more.
Yeah. It's interesting. I've worked in financial services for a while now, like eight or nine years. And at one of the places I worked, we got to test everything, and which a lot of places you can't do that. But at this specific place, we were testing rates on banners. So like, a rate for like
a rate, like a mortgage
savings
rate?
Account rate.
Okay.
So the good rates, right? The higher the rate, the more money you'll make eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And we had these banners, and one of them had a rate and one of them didn't. They just had copy.
Mm-hmm.
And
text that was,
yeah,
just written on the banner.
Yeah. And 66% more conversions from the one that did not have a rate.
Really?
66%.
That makes no sense.
And
like, logic,
yeah,
doesn't, like, as a techie, I want to know numbers.
Yes. And that's what you would think, but our brain is like trained to just ignore like those big giant numbers in our face.
Hmm.
I guess like ad blocking or whatever, we just ignore it. And to go with that, we also tested like learn more buttons versus learn more text, like copy, like inline text.
Mm-hmm.
The learn more text always got more clicks. Always versus,
so you mean like
the
an
button.
Entire paragraph?
Yeah, with like a little like blue learn more link.
Really?
Yep. Got more clicks, like double more clicks than a button.
See, that's
that
really interesting, because I'm actually in the process of redesigning our ASP.NET website.
Yeah.
And they've added a bunch of these blue learn more buttons.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. I wonder if it's because text links are kind of passive and non-threatening.
Yeah.
Because I think this is interesting to dig into the psychology of this.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing, and you tell me what you think.
Yeah.
Like text links I click on all the time, mm-hmm, and they don't indicate an action. They indicate an interest to learn more.
Yes.
About something in CNN or, mm-hmm, you know, some news article. But a button indicates a certain amount of intent.
Yeah.
And there's a certain amount of strength required to express one's intent.
Mm-hmm.
So pushing a button is psychologically more difficult than clicking links.
Yeah. And you got to think about marketing. Like, everyone hates marketing, but everyone loves marketing, right? Like, I know someone that says he hates marketing. He hates it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at him, like, you can see his, like, Lacoste shirt with his, I don't know, fancy 7 jeans or whatever, and mm-hmm, his Nikes. Like, you hate marketing, but you are marketing.
You are, yeah. Yeah. You're walking marketing success.
Exactly.
Story.
Like, and people want to hate marketing. But any kind of button that I click on the internet is being tracked. Everything's being tracked.
Yeah.
So, which is crazy to think about, but it is. And it's just crazy to see these numbers on designers spend all this time making these fancy buttons for what?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that gets into the conversation of the like form over function, right? So, like, if it's not functional, what's the point? So why spend, you know, 3 hours designing this impressive button when you can just put it in text?
Yeah. You know, I worked in financial services. We talked a little bit about this before, mm-hmm, for 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
I did retail online banking.
Yeah.
So like logging in, checking your balance and stuff, mm-hmm, like that. And then also integration with QuickBooks and money and things like,
okay,
that. So my stuff was not the homepage of the bank,
mm-hmm,
but it was balances, bill payment, money transfers,
okay,
stuff like,
yeah,
that. And we would get into these arguments with the bankers about, like, is this rule, this line, 1 pixel wide or 3 pixels wide?
Yeah.
and they would fight with the designer. And I was always like, that means nothing. It changes nothing.
Yeah.
No one is going to either use or not use the product based on that rule. So the suit, I always said that the suit should really be focusing on what the functionality is. And if the designer wants a one pixel rule,
yeah,
and we trust that designer, mm-hmm, let him do it. I mean, is that a good strategy?
Yeah. I mean, I want to say, because I'm a designer, that the designer always knows best. But
well, if they're a good designer.
Well, no. If they're a good designer, they'll listen to everyone. And then make an informed decision based on that.
Touche.
I mean, that's what I do. Whenever I'm in a meeting, I'm usually the last person that talks, because I really want to understand, like, example, like a pixel rule. Take it away. If it's that big of a deal, don't put it at all. Like, and that's how I look at problems like that. It's designers are not artists. Like, and that's a big confusion.
Ooh, I think that there's probably designers right now who just like got upset and they're looking at their podcast.
It's okay.
Radio.
It's okay.
Designers are not artists.
They are not. And this is going to get a lot of bad feedback.
No,
but I'm a firm believer that designers are problem solvers and artists are problem causers. So, and not in a negative way, because I do art. I will paint, whatever.
Yeah, sure.
I do crafts. I love Pinterest. But designers, I look at everything like it's math. I put everything on a grid. Every design decision that I make is a decision that I make.
Hmm.
If there is a pixel rule and it doesn't need to be there, then I won't put it there.
Hmm.
Every choice is intentional. But art, like, and let me finish that before going to art. When how design and art meet is after all those design decisions are made, and you want to give your user a feeling, you want to invoke a feeling. It's like Apple and those commercials, or Google and those commercials. Gosh, like, there was one Super Bowl commercial for Chrome about like proposing in Paris, and I will never forget it. Or there was one where a father wrote emails to his daughter, and it was so good.
Mm.
And if you look at it, it was probably some designer and an art director, and it took them like a couple days to make, probably like no money at all, really. Mm. But it impacts you so hard.
So is that artistry or design?
That's where art hits design. That's where it collides. But as far as art goes, art is purely like emotion. It's purely feel emotion. It's not really problem solving. Right?
I see.
Yeah. So the difference between art and design, I think.
Okay. So let me see if I understand that paraphrase, so we don't get like angry letters.
Okay.
From people.
You can tweet me angry,
no, I think
angry
this
things.
Is good.
It's okay.
I think I understand. So mm-hmm. What I'm hearing you say is that if you are saying, I'm an artist, your job is to express yourself, to evoke emotion in other people, and to get that art out of you. And
yes.
It may not have a purpose. It may not have a form or a function.
Yes.
It may just be, hey, it's art.
Yes.
And then a designer, though, is like a programmer in the sense of, I'm designing for a purpose.
Yes.
For an explicit reason, either mm-hmm. to get them to enter their credit card, or get them to click this button, mm-hmm. or to make it so that they can check their email on an iPhone.
Or even take it out of web completely, interstate signs.
Ooh, like, I love interstate signs.
I love, more than anything, going to like a real city. And mm-hmm. When I say real city, I mean like my favorite city ever, Boston. Like looking at the map for the T.
Yeah.
It like stops my heart every time. It's it's incredible. And
is it T? What is this? Like the T party?
The train, the T.
Oh, the T.
Yeah, the T.
Oh, I
yeah.
see. You like the train. Sorry. The train.
Yeah, I love subways.
Do you like the subway maps that people are always redoing in New York? Like every designer
yes.
has to do the
Yes, the Tumblr. God, I love charts and graphs.
You have to send me a link to this. Is it a Tumblr of just train maps?
Yes, and there's also a Tumblr, ilovecharts.tumblr.com.
Okay.
So good.
Yeah.
I love charts, so it's good. It's like math. I love it. I love design because it's like math.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't consider myself like a math genius, but it really is, you have this problem that is from the business or whoever or your client. And they tell you the solution, but it's the pieces of the I guess algorithm or problem or whatever that make that solution that makes the solution so good,
mm-hmm.
right? So like for our website. It's, and I'm going to get into the responsive talk a little bit. I am a firm believer that creativity is not device dependent. It is not. It shouldn't matter if you are on your phone, on your tablet, on your desktop. You should have the same experience. You should be giving those same emotions.
So you're pro responsive design, it sounds like.
Yes, for the right cases,
Like an example I give is I'm actually going to go talk on mobile in an
hour.
Okay?
I'm excited. I'm excited for that.
Well, hopefully it doesn't suck.
I hope it won't. I'm sure.
One of the things I don't like is when I have this friend who has, and I need to bug her about this. I'm going to call her out. Her name's Lovey. We do a talk show together on my other podcast. And she, all of her blogs evoke emotion. They use red and bright colors, and she loves shoes. So there's always like red and shoes.
I love shoes. Okay. But woman doesn't love shoes.
But in the old days, when you went to her blog, you got this generic WP Touch kind of like WordPress fake mobile site. So then I told her to get rid of that. But now her site has an ad across the top that is so wide that it's forcing the width of the entire site. So you just have a horrible experience on mobile.
Yeah.
And I really feel like minimal amount of work would bring that bright red, emotional, fun look to the device.
Yeah.
But because she didn't go that last step.
Yeah. I wonder if she could kill the ad on mobile.
Or make it tiny or do an important or whatever.
You don't need an ad on mobile.
But when I work with my designer who did my blog, it's funny that you talk about the difference between form and function and motion. Versus trying to solve a problem. I sat down and I said, you know, I want it to be earthy and organic and beige, but not boring kind of beige.
Yeah.
I told him all the emotions I wanted.
Yeah.
But then I also said I wasn't interested in page views. I was interested in comments. So he made the comment bubble bigger and the comment link brighter. Mm-hmm. And he met those requirements of making it artsy and not artsy. It was effectively art, but it also was incredibly functional.
Yeah. And it's funny. It's a lot of like mind trickery. I feel like I come across that a lot in my line of work is we have to make people feel these emotions. And like, how do you do that? You use colors, like color theory. A funny thing. I did, my senior thesis on color theory and the psychology behind color. And do you know what color is bought more than any other color? Like, this color, everyone will buy.
Red?
Mm-mm. Tiffany blue.
What Tiffany is like a sky blue? Or what?
So, it's like a greenish, bluish, turquoisey color.
No. That's such a gross color.
It's not. My toenails are that color. Well, you can't.
I can't see.
Yeah, but like, it's...
Really? That's the color?
Yep.
Now I'm going to have to go look and see if I've bought those things.
Like, go look around your house, I guarantee you.
It's not like a seafoam green. Like the,
it's... No, that's...
You're going to have to show me this
color.
It's
a little less obnoxious. I'll show you the color.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So people like blue.
People like blue. People, and in like, not like navy blue, but like this fun blue. Mm. And I actually got to test this at one of the banks I worked at. And I'll tell you what, they love that blue.
Really?
And they're... main color was not blue.
You know, I went to a blog recently that was linked to me on Twitter, and as soon as I got there, it was white text on a black background.
No,
it looked
like
the 90s. And I didn't have the heart to tell the guy, I mean, how do you say, I love your content, I think it would be more effective if you inverted your colors?
You just tell him.
Really? You don't think he'd be offended?
I should totally tell this guy. Yeah, you should, because I
just couldn't see myself ever going back.
So yeah, and I'm kind of heartless about this stuff because a long time ago I took my ego out of it. Like when as a designer, it's not about you, right? And maybe that's going back to like art versus design.
No, that's
again.
Awesome because
it's not about you. It's not
the
about
same
me.
For coders.
Yeah.
So many times there's a kind of coder that takes it personally.
Yeah.
Like you are not your for loop.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. And as a designer, like, and I mentioned this in my talk yesterday, like, fail. Like, do not be afraid to fail. Embrace it. And there's a quote, and I don't know where it came from, but it's make better mistakes tomorrow. And I, like, live by that. I had a great mentor through college, and he said to me once, you need to stop worrying about today and start worrying about next week, tomorrow, next week, next month. Like when you make design decisions, don't just do it for what's good now.
Mm-hmm.
Do it for what's good later as well. And that changed everything. It did. And so now I pay closer attention to the design decisions that I make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've noticed we've got some designs that we're putting out for the ASP.NET site, for example, and we've noticed that they don't work well on touch devices.
Yeah.
Like there's hover states
yeah.
to get menus to drop down, and we just never thought about
that. I like this. But so now on like tablet devices, there's going to be like hover states. Like and
how? Like you used to touch it, or you can't move your finger. The iPad doesn't know you're hovering.
You hover over it.
But the capacitive screen doesn't know you're hovering.
Yet.
Yet.
So, I've read blogs about this, and someone on Twitter, I can't remember who it was, but they mentioned this, and it's why type or use a mouse when you can use voice or gestures.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I love that. I love it. Like, it's so right. Like, I was reading your blog about this, and it had those like Minority Report screenshots.
Oh, the leap motion.
Yeah. Like that, like.
I got a very bifurcated response. Everyone was like, yes, right on. That's exactly what I felt when I got it.
Well, I haven't used it.
But then I got a lot of responses from developers of the leap motion mm-hmm. who used it that are like, well, you know, you have to walk before you can run, and you know, you can't, don't pick on a baby. He's just a baby, but he'll learn.
Yeah. I mean.
I bought the thing. For retail price, and it came boxed, I expected a retail experience.
Well, I mean, yes, but, you know, in those developers' defense, they've probably been working on that for a while.
Yeah, I mean,
it's their baby.
I haven't heard directly from the Leap Motion people, but I heard from lots of people that are doing stuff,
mm-hmm.
like developing for it, third-party developers.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, well, you're being too harsh. And my only argument was that...
I don't think so.
They hyped up that product so much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And when they tell me that it can see 1/100th of a millimeter.
Yeah.
Well, then you sure about to be able to see me wave.
Yeah.
And that was very frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, I have not experienced that. I have a friend who was like waiting at Best Buy for it to come out.
Seriously?
He like tried to get it on Friday. They wouldn't let him. They had to wait until Sunday. I heard about it for like a week. It was crazy.
And what happened?
I don't know. I never asked him what he thought, but
that's not a story.
Honestly, I just forgot about
well,
it.
Well, you have to find out because
I will.
Is he totally disappointed and sad and took it back?
I have no idea. He hasn't told me, but I have a feeling if it was a good experience, he would have been like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
But if it was a terrible experience, he would have been like, this is horrible.
See, the thing about that interaction model was that they were trying to tell us that it could see your fingers mm-hmm. and it could see you down to the millimeter. And I expected intense accuracy. But what I'm realizing is I don't want that. I want coarse gesture recognition.
Yeah.
There's an app that's in beta right now on Windows 8.1. I just upgraded my little Surface thing. It's a little portable.
I didn't even know what that was until like a day ago.
Windows 8.1 or a Surface?
A Surface.
So it's like an iPad, but it's Windows iPad.
Yeah.
Okay. So the Windows 8 is pretty unpolished and it's kind of rough.
Mm-hmm.
Windows 8.1 is 0.1 better. And it's way better. It just mm-hmm. brings the whole thing to life. It's like when, you know, the first iPhone was amazing, but, you know, they had problems.
Yeah.
It iterated. So anyway, there's this app that's the recipe app.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you put your Surface and it has like a little kickstand and you start. And the way that you move to the next recipe, or the next step in the recipe, is you just wave your hand in front
good,
of it.
Good. Because
it uses the webcam.
I use my iPad a lot.
I use it for recipes food all the time.
For recipes especially. And you know what I hate? When I'm like covered in like flour, butter, and egg.
Yep.
And like I have to touch my iPad.
Yeah.
I like try it with my like elbow.
I've done it with my nose. Seriously. You're absolutely right. Like it sounds like a silly use case, but once you have cooked with a tablet next to you, like you can't do recipes any other way.
Exactly.
But my point calling back to the leap motion mm-hmm. is I don't care that you can see my fingers down to the millimeter.
Yeah.
What I do care is that if I go like this and move my hand from right to left quickly, it clearly means next page.
Yes.
And some people might do it with their hand. Some people might do it like a wave. If I have to write the code to like detect all the different ways that someone might do that, then that's way too much detail.
Question for you.
Okay.
What about other languages that don't read left to right, but right?
Well, yeah,
to
then
left.
I should totally like, yeah, if I'm Arabic or Hebrew, I should wipe the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah. But my point is that the leap motion required you to be precise in what is ultimately a gross motor motion.
Yeah.
well, in this particular example, and this is a super fine example, I'm not in any way trying to say the Surface is comparable to LeapMotion. Yeah. I'm saying this one app turns the webcam on, and I'm sure if I ran quickly past it, like not using my arm, just my head just shut. You know what I mean? It would probably go to the next recipe.
I'm imagining that right now.
Because the coder just wrote some basic thing that's like some large object goes from side to side.
Yes.
That's what I want. Like I want to be on my Mac or my PC and then just kind of flip my arm up in a flippant motion.
Yes.
And that would scroll.
Yeah.
But I don't want to have to like hold my finger precisely or two fingers out and then
You know what I mean? It's like that reminds me of like the tap radius on like phones. How like some websites
the tap
T-A-P? T-A-P.
Okay.
How there'll be like this tiny little X that you need to hit, but and Apple does this too. Oh. They have this tiny little thing, but they don't even follow their own standard of like a 44 by 44 tap radius. They just have this tiny little text that you have to tap on.
So what does that mean? That's the I touched with the tip of my finger and I was off.
Yes.
And you just figure I'm within 50. So
yeah, it's like thank the Lord for autocorrect. Are you kidding me? Right?
Okay. Yeah.
I
see.
Yeah. So like you mistype everything. And if it wasn't for autocorrect, sometimes autocorrect is not good. But
well, I get halfway through the word and I know I'm wrong. And I go, it better figure it out. Exactly.
I do that too. And then it doesn't. And you're like, what?
Yes.
And then
it's even worse when the horribly misspelled word gets into your dictionary.
Yes. I do. my friends and I, we have like nicknames for everyone. And there's one person that we call Davysaurus.
Okay.
And his name, Davysaurus, is in all of our autocorrects.
Awesome.
So as soon as we start to type like DAV, no matter what it is, it all automatically goes to Davysaurus. I'm like, no, now I have to backspace all of that.
Yeah, exactly. I have the exact same problem. We talked to my wife's family half in English and half in Ndebele, which is her Zulu-based language. And it has these ridiculous words with like 50 consonants and stuff. And anytime I have like a Z or a G, it just assumes one of these obscure words and it just explodes. Yeah. And then that's a lousy experience.
Yeah.
That's a lousy experience. One of the other things that I thought was interesting about you, is that you run the Jacksonville User Experience Group. So you're a community leader. We would call you that, right?
Sort of. Yeah.
But that's not as interesting as the fact that you go to other user groups.
Yeah. I am super involved in the community. I go to about 25 a month, sometimes more than one a night. I feel like, I noticed that in Jacksonville, especially, there's not a lot of like UX people or they know what UX is, but they don't think that they can do it because they think it's only for designers. And I don't think that at all. I think that, that UX is everyone working together, whether it's project managers, whether it's like copywriters, devs, any kind of dev. I love the majority of our group consists of developers. Which is interesting, because I feel like our careers are forcing us all to be hybrids. So as a UX designer or strategist or whatever I am, I feel like I have to have a knowledge of all of these different, like, programming languages, or at least have like the basic fundamentals of them so I can work with those people and design with those people. And specifically say with and not for. I'm not designing for developers. I'm designing for users, but I'm designing with the developers. And, I feel like going out to these community events, it shows them that I'm serious. Like I want to know their specific things, whether it's, I go to the Big Data meetup here and it's way out of my league. Like these guys are incredibly smart. But I will go and I will sit there and I will try to understand. I'll ask questions and really like dig into what it is so I can understand it, so I can design for it. And the community, I was like this in Charlotte too. Charlotte has an amazing tech community, but here, when I first started Jax UX, which was a year ago, our first meetup had 8 people, 4 of whom I like begged. I was like, you have to come. Now we average about 50 people a month. We have 220 members. And it's and I haven't really like marketed it. Mm-hmm. I've just gone out to these community events and opened up to people. And a lot of people in our field they're introverts. And I'm guilty of being an introvert sometimes too, but I really like pull them over to me and say, hey, let's build this community. Mm-hmm. And when I first started, someone said to me, it'll be interesting to see how this goes because this has been started before, but people just give up.
Right.
And now I'm like a year into it.
Yeah.
And we're growing every day, like two or three people join. And it's incredible to see. And just the fact to like let people know that like it's okay that you're not a designer because it's not about design. It's not what it's about. It's about finding different ways to solve problems.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, I had someone talk on Angular versus Knockout, which was a great turnout. I have talked about persona creation. I have some JavaScript people come out. And it's fun. It's a great time.
But what do you say to the developers who have never been to a user group at all? They just like, it's five, I punch out.
I actually talked to one today. He was like, this is my first conference ever. And I'm not really involved in the community. I'm like, I tell them, if you want to succeed, then come out to these groups.
Yeah.
And I feel like the thing that drives all of us, whether we're designers or developers, to these events, is that we all have this shared feeling of we're not okay with just being okay. And we have to be good. We're passionate and you can see it like just walking out there. All these people are so passionate. They're taking the most valuable thing in the world, which is time, to come and see like us talk. And it's incredible. It's an incredible feeling.
Yeah. I have told one of the things that I said in the keynote that I really believe, and I think people laughed a little bit when I said it, but I think it's true. As I said, just because you're here, I'm addressing the audience, you are in the top tier of developers.
Yes.
Not necessarily in skill, but in passion, because you're here. Because for every one developer who's here, there's 1,000 that never showed.
Yeah. That was a really early talk, too.
Oh, thank you.
Your little keynote is early.
My little keynote. I thought it went okay.
Yeah, it was good. It was good.
Well,
yeah.
Thanks. I wasn't fishing for compliments, but thank you very much.
It's okay. No, it was funny. I really got to do the animated GIF thing.
You know, it was funny that you say that because we had Greg Young here, and he actually had content.
Oh, yeah. I was talking to him.
I was like, I have no content. I just have animated GIFs. But I talked for like 75 minutes.
Yeah, that's how it's supposed to be. I think you're supposed to talk more than what your presentation has.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I went way over.
Whatever.
Cool. Well, give me links to your user group and your website and your portfolio and stuff, and I'll add it to the show notes.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Natasha Iriziri, for talking to me today. And we're here at Code on the Beach, a new conference happening in Jacksonville, Florida. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.